All right, the U.S. women's national team is going to play the first of two friendlies against South Korea tomorrow night. These will be the last two international matches for the legendary Carly Lloyd. Our coverage begins at 8 Eastern on ESPN2 and the ESPN app, so you can watch from anywhere, one app, one tap. Now, before we turn the hour, how about the celebration? The new WNBA champion, Sky, celebrating in the streets of Chicago with the fans yesterday, and Candace Parker, who is a local, spoke about the special moment of winning it for the city.
Dreaming of being in that moment, like dreaming of being and bringing a title to your hometown. Like, honestly, like this group right here, to do it with a special group in front of a city that showed up, we turned up at Wintrust. Like, everybody that showed up, thank you.
How about that story? Again, we have Tim Legler and Doris Burke here with all the NBA, but how about that story coming home after sort of some of the ups and downs she has had and just being dominant the way she was?
At one point, she was nominated by her colleagues as the most overrated player in the WNBA. Overrated no more. That's a two-time NCAA champion. Good for Candace.
Yeah, well, she who laughs last laughs best in this case. All right, we're rolling here along as we come to you live from the Seaport, brought to you by Chase, jam-packed. Roll it, Cindy. We got stuff to do. We are getting up with the stars on display. Huge statements made on opening night. We've got all the highlights as the stars wore out. Plus, how about them Cowboys? The concerns continue. Are they, however, enough to derail a Super Bowl run? We're talking about him. And did Aaron Rodgers really say what we think he did? Because if so, it's the biggest clue about his future yet. You'll hear it in this hour as we get up with you, starting right now with opening night in the NBA. Again, it's LeBron and the new-look Lakers. It's Steph Curry and the Warriors. What an interesting opener at Staples. And early on, I tell you, LeBron, Doris, on the defensive end, looking good.
He is just a couple months shy of 37. Send it back, LeBron.
Running over and making the defensive play. And then on the other end, Anthony Davis, Timmy, in the painted area.
Yeah, showing you again, 6'11", athletic, strong, just a tough matchup for anybody. When he's healthy, Lakers are a real problem.
Man, it's LeBron off to a hot start as well. He had 18 in the first half. Lakers led it by 6 at the break, but then they're running the floor, turning defense, Doris, into offense, and it's AD.
This is where they're going to be problematic, in transition with their size and their speed. Look out on your head, AD.
Davis had 33 on the night. Then a minute later, Lakers are up 4, and here comes LeBron.
Yeah, LeBron James and Tom Brady redefining what an aging athlete looks like, I guess, because that doesn't make any sense for him to still look the way that he does this deep into his career.
He had 34, but then here came the Warriors in the fourth quarter. They had trailed most of the night, but that was Jordan Poole, and then here's Russell Westbrook. We'll talk about him in a moment. Just never got comfortable. 8 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and Doris, it was Poole who was able to make the big plays.
Other than the Klay Thompson story, the one consistent theme from the Warriors is how good Jordan Poole is going to be. When he made shots, the game changed.
At Steph Curry there, he had a quiet triple-double, if you will. 21 points, 10 boards, 10 assists, Warriors by 5. And then here's the dagger. Andrew Wiggins knocks down the 3. Warriors, a big win in a game they trailed most of the night, 121-114. So an interesting opener there and a nice win for Steph and company. And we talked about the newest Laker, that's Russell Westbrook. Again, 8 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists in his Laker debut that matches his total number of games with single digits in all of those categories from his previous 133 games combined. So, Tim, what does that mean? I know it's only one game, and we've got a long way to go, but what does it say about where Russell Westbrook is going to fit in here?
It's the first time in his career he's been the third guy, and he's a guy that's used to forcing the issue, and that's the way he wants to play. And at worst, he has played next to a high-usage guy like Durant or James Harden, but still had plenty of opportunities to go be himself. He's going to be struggling now, I think, to be in rhythm pretty much the entire season. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to have stat lines like he did last night, or he's going to have a lot of nights where you don't think he's a factor. That's not what I'm saying. It's just going to take him a while to figure out, how can I be as effective and impact winning without being the same type of offensive player that I've been throughout my career? Because I just don't think a guy that's already streaky, Doris, with his shooting, and is going to have a hard time not having the ball in his hands. How does a guy like that have efficient nights from the field, from the 3, from the line? I think he's going to struggle with that. He's got to figure out other ways to help winning.
Efficiency has never really been a great part of his game. To me, it's where is he effective in the offense? If you have it less frequently and you've got to move it faster, where does he find his place if it's not in transition? You can't get 2-3 happy in an offense that should be centered around Anthony Davis.
Let's talk about him for a moment, because many people refer to the Lakers as, well, it's LeBron and AD. Do you think that this year, and if they're going to win the championship, he becomes AD and LeBron?
I think when AD is a top five player, as opposed to being just a top five talent, he's the baddest man on the planet. He is as dangerous as Giannis Antetokounmpo on both ends, because he's capable of dominating both aspects. And we saw him do what he does best last night, mix his spots on the floor. You saw the spin-off lob dunk from Rajon Rondo. The mid-range game is there. He's got guard skills at that size. He can handle it. He regressed as a three-point shooter. I expect him to do better there. If he's a top five player and LeBron sustains his level, look out, they're a problem.
Yeah, look, LeBron James Anthony Davis is so fortunate in that he's got a guy in LeBron James who not only is willing to cede control to Anthony Davis, he wants that to happen. And when he won that championship a couple years ago and Anthony Davis was finals MVP, LeBron James was the first guy. Like, he wrote down the first vote. That's what he wants it to be, because he understands then he can pick and choose a little bit more. And he'd rather be more of a guy that's a facilitator and playmaker and take over games when he has to as a scorer. But when Anthony Davis is playing at the top of his game, LeBron James is his number one fan and wants it to happen.
And we just live in such weird times here. They actually won that title a year ago last week. So right. I know it's two championships ago, but in actual time, it was a year ago last week. And so it hasn't been all that long since we saw Anthony Davis able to carry that team to a title. Meanwhile, that was one game last night. We had two really interesting ones. We got the defending champion Milwaukee Bucks with their banner and their rings. Doris, what do you think of the ring?
Completely understated. Love it.
As always. and then it's Giannis. He just looks awfully good here as he brings it up. Doris, do we want to see a lot of this in his game this year?
I'm going on the record. This guy's going to shoot 35% from three. His free throws, he's so much more confident and comfortable, and he's unleashed. The challenge is off his shoulders. He's won at Tim Legler.
Yeah, I love it. I love that number, too. And I think he's put so much work into getting himself there. And then this is the other aspect of his game. Probably still doesn't get enough talk. His ability to protect the paint, control the lane defensively.
Yeah, they had the big lead through most of the first half. And Kevin Durant had a very good third quarter last night. He scored 13 in the third to keep the Nets in it. But this was a night that would belong the defending champs. And most of it, Doris, is Giannis.
Yeah, Giannis just sets the tone. I remember a season ago, Chris Middleton saying to me, because of the way Giannis plays, he's the hardest worker. He's also one of the best people. We want to play for him. He leads the way, Tim.
He had huge numbers, 32 points, 14 rebounds. Bucks with a big pull away and win it easily in the fourth quarter. So we spent a lot of our first conversation this morning talking about Giannis. He's awesome. They're awesome. Let's talk about the Nets, because I don't know that there's a more interesting situation in the entire NBA, maybe ever, than what they have going on. At this moment, they have two of the three superstars. As such, what are they?
Well, listen, eventually, even if, let's just say, hypothetically, and I don't believe this will happen, Kyrie Irving just didn't play all year for them, and they just had these two guys with that roster. Eventually, they're still going to be the team at the end, I think, standing, looking Milwaukee in the eye in the conference finals. But they have things to figure out. You think about it, KD and Harden have not played that much together. Those other role players don't know what it's like, Doris, to play alongside both of those guys for extended periods of time. All of that stuff's going to find its own rhythm without Kyrie. Now, look, they're going to have defensive issues. That third superstar certainly makes up for a lot of mistakes on that end. When you have three guys forcing the team to take the ball into the net all night, you're better defensively because of that. So that is a problem. But I still think the talent of those two players, eventually, once they find their rhythm afloat together and then the role players around what it's like to play with them, I still think the Nets, without Kyrie, are the team that ultimately would be looking at Milwaukee in the conference finals.
They have enough to win right now most nights. The champions obviously set themselves apart, I thought, last night. You clearly took a talent hit in the absence of Kyrie Irving. Shot creator for himself, stretched the floor from three. What you could do with the three of them is James Harden could play by himself. Last night you saw them stagger the minutes of KD and James Harden because there is no Kyrie Irving. So you are missing a big piece here. But in the East, as much as it is improved, they have enough to win with those two guys.
How long can they live with this? I mean, whatever the uncertainty of this hanging over their heads is, if this does, to your point, last all through the season, doesn't that have to wear on them?
It could last longer than the situation in Philadelphia for this reason. The player that we're talking about has not indicated, I don't want to play here with those guys for this organization. That's not what this is. And I think eventually there's going to be some give one way or another. I don't think that they're in the mindset of, hey, we got to move on from Kyrie. I think they're thinking at some point we're going to get Kyrie Irving. So in the meantime, let's go out and try to win games. That's a different situation than what Philly is facing when they think, what are we supposed to do? Because this guy might never buy into being here. Now it's a no-win situation for the organization.
All right, I'm going to leave it there for the moment. We will later in this hour talk about that situation in Philly with Ben Simmons and where it goes from here. That's on the way. In the meantime, our top story in the NFL, the Browns play tomorrow night. And despite aggravating his torn labrum in Sunday's loss to the Cardinals, their quarterback Baker Mayfield says he's still preparing to play against the Broncos. But this sounds bad. Take a listen to Baker yesterday.
Only I know how my body feels. And if anyone questions whether, you know, I'm hindering the team and going out there injured, that's just not right. So it's my decision. I get to say, you know, whether I'm able to play or not, and that's just how it is. Obviously, if I was in a physical state where I wasn't able to play to the best of my abilities and I was hurting the team, I wouldn't do that because I care about winning and I want to get this team in the best position to do that. So that's just what it's about.
Okay, so we get that, and a player being questionable for a Thursday night game is one thing. But as we were talking about, Jeremy, can fill us in on this. This sounds like it is much bigger right now with Baker Mayfield than just this one game.
Yeah, Greeny, so I checked with a source. Nothing firm on the game. He's likely a game-time decision. They're going to let him rest up for the next 24, 36 hours, see how he feels. But the injury looms large because we're talking about a torn labrum. So he's likely going to need surgery either now or at the end of the year. Baker Mayfield does not want it now. He wants to push to play. He's getting a second opinion independently to just see what he's dealing with, what kind of pain can he actually play through right now. And so the Browns are already out there, top two offensive tackles, top two running backs, a lot for Kevin Stefanski, the head coach, to consider
here. Yeah, we've made it clear. This is not an injury that gets better with rest. It's an injury that will require surgery at some point. It's just a question of how soon he gets it and can they push it to the offseason, and there were all sorts of contract ramifications of that as well. But let's just deal in the moment. This is a team that we was thinking Super Bowl thoughts when the season began. I can't believe I'm asking this. Is that over?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely over. And they haven't played all that well so far this season.
Right.
Their defense is one thing that I thought was going to be much better. It hasn't performed. Even though Myles Garrett is unstoppable, the rest of the defense can't consistently come together in big games against good teams. So you put all that aside, and you still have the issues on the offense. They are a run-centric offense that are down their top two running backs and don't have their top two tackles. And they have a quarterback who has been average to slightly above average, if we're being generous so far this season, who's injured. So then he's going to play likely worse than he would if he was healthy. So this team doesn't look very good. Odell Beckham, their best, their most talented receiver, is also dealing with injuries and trying to fight through, trying to come back, get over these drop issues. It just doesn't look good. It looks very bleak for a team that had high expectations coming into this season.
Very high. Tim, what do you think? Are the problems they're dealing with right now solvable this season?
Well, no, I don't think they are solvable because the quarterback's not going to get healthier throughout the season. And I thought that when Baker talked after last week's game, I thought it was really interesting. We knew coming in that he had a torn labrum in his left shoulder. And then we saw the play where J.J. Watt gets to him, and it's pretty ugly, and he re-aggravates that shoulder. But he also mentioned that on a non-contact play, his shoulder, it slipped out again. So he dislocates his shoulder twice in a football game, and one of them's non-contact. I think that's a real problem going forward. Like, you know, and Nate can speak to this. The reality is if your shoulder is sliding in and out, you're in a lot of pain, and you're struggling, you know, to be able to even think about playing each and every week. And for a quarterback that's a good player, not a great player, and now he's playing at way less than 100%, I don't think we can expect necessarily that all of a sudden he's going to play way better than he's been playing. And I think that's a real problem for Cleveland, and I honestly think that we could see him get shut down at some point this year.
What, Nick, your final thought?
Yeah, I mean, the toughest thing about the situation is he's worse than he was, and they're asking for more out of him considering the situation. And anytime they ask more of Baker, things don't normally turn out well. Now they're asking more of a hobbled Baker who's going to be in a harness and who's going to be pushing for this team to win and also pushing to get a contract at the end of the season.
I feel terrible for the fans in Cleveland. Yeah. I really do. This is the year that everything was sort of building toward, and this is how it goes. Yeah.
Yeah, the Browns didn't push hard on a contract this offseason, so Baker said, cool, I'll go out and play and up my value. But you risk the injury, and here we are.
Now, he bet on himself, and now there's a lot of things that have to get worked out there. We'll see where they go. One of their problems is in the division. Lamar Jackson is playing like an MVP. The Ravens rolled the Chargers this week, But we've got some sneaky big news that will impact their chase for a title. That's on the way. Plus, after years of disappointment, everything seems to be going right in Dallas. Is the biggest challenge ahead going to come from within their own locker room? We will do that. And speaking of challenges, it's time to do this. Sneaky Hembo for Dominique. Who is the only quarterback in NFL history to win multiple MVPs before turning 28 years old? Lamar could do it. We've got the answer next.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
So during our break, Dominique Foxworth was talking a little trash towards Hembo, said he thinks this is a layup. So let's see. Lamar Jackson right now might wind up winning the MVP this year. Who's the only quarterback in history to win multiple MVPs before turning 28?
So Hembo gave me one hint because I was thinking maybe Johnny Unitas, and he said, no, we're not going back that far.
Okay.
So I appreciate that from Hembo. So I think Marino only won one, and it was early in his career. I'm leaning Favre or Montana. Favre started in Atlanta, so I'm saying that that year took him a little bit off. I'm going Montana.
It's Brett Favre.
Son of a gun!
His second MVP at the age of 27. Lamar Jackson has already won one. He won't turn 25 until January, so he actually has like 3 more chances to try and win that. Let's talk about quarterbacks
well done,
here
Hembo.
As we score that one up for Hembo. Let's do the quarterback quick reads with Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, which quarterback has most surprised you so far this season?
I'm going Joe Burrow, not because I didn't think he was a good player, but he's coming off a significant injury, obviously the torn ACL. Thinking 10 starts last year, threw 13 touchdowns. He's already thrown 14 this year. To me, he looks like he is all the way back to the player people expected him to be, and that's been a pleasant surprise.
Next quick read. Are Patrick Mahomes and his Chiefs in trouble?
I don't think they are. Now, they've been turning the football over a bunch, and it's just a little bit uncharacteristic of a team that's coached by Andy Reid. So whether it's been receivers dropping passes, whether it's been running backs fumbling, or quite honestly, Patrick Mahomes putting the ball in harm's way, that stuff is, I think, things that Andy Reid ultimately ends up getting figured out because of how he approaches it and coaches his football team.
And we're just talking about Lamar. If I gave you right now Kyler Murray or Lamar for MVP, who you got?
I'm taking Kyler Murray, in part because I feel like I've been on him since the summertime, but here's what I would say about Kyler Murray. Last year, he rushed for over 800 yards and 11 touchdowns. He's only rushed for 37 yards this year. The area for growth in his game is crazy when you think that he could run the ball way better and more effectively than he has so far this season. So the passing is going to stay the same. He's a really good passer surrounded by great talent. I think the running can catch up, which means the production will be wild.
All right, his team is the last unbeaten in the league. In the meantime, we have sneaky big news. I want to go back to the Ravens for this, and this is really bad. News coming in that their offensive tackle, Ronnie Stanley, is going to have season-ending ankle surgery. So this is a team that has already been, I don't think we can say they've been decimated because they're 5-1, but they've certainly been hit extraordinarily hard by injuries. As you see, 17 players on injured reserve. Guys they were counting on to have huge impact this year. Marcus Peters, Dobbins, Edwards, and several of the others. And here they are continuing to keep it going. It is yet another obstacle they will have to overcome. And as we talk about Lamar Jackson, the piece that you did this summer got a lot of attention when you were reporting that there are people in the league who thought that Lamar Jackson was going to get figured out.
Yeah.
Obviously, that does not seem to be the case.
We can just let the laugh speak. Yeah. Okay, so for the Ravens fans who hound me day and night on these social media streets, this is for you, okay? Talking to people around the league lately, they said, look, they are eating some crow. They're saying he's showing major growth as a passer. There was legitimately a lot of skepticism when I talked to about 50-plus people around the league, coaches, including some players, about Lamar, that he kind of is in a high school offense or a variation of that where they run the ball a ton, and he hasn't been overly accurate last year. He just wasn't. And so they wondered if in a two-minute drill of a playoff game where things tighten up, can he get it done? It wasn't about, you know, can he win some games and put up some numbers. They knew he could do that. It wasn't going to fall apart. But, look, they have stretched him, emboldened him as a passer. They're not running the ball as much. They're saying, hey, go win the game for us in the pocket. And, look, he's delivering in a big way.
We've almost lost Nick.
I'm back.
John Harbaugh said that those critics are whistling in the graveyard.
Yeah,
to be clear, again, it was not Jeremy Fowler saying this. He was reporting what other people were saying. With that said, Tim, you have some tape that demonstrates exactly the ways that Lamar Jackson is playing differently.
Well, Jeremy just alluded to it, you know, playing better from inside the pocket. And that doesn't mean you have to change what you're doing offensively. It just means Lamar needs to be a little bit better. Here's what I'm talking about. Subtle movements in the pocket and then knowing where to go with the football. Subtle movements to the left, not eager to get out and run the football, but instead slight movement, ball to the check down, and now all of a sudden you're staying on schedule. And for that offense, that's important. Similar situation here, okay? You're going to end up getting a free runner, you know, in his face. And so when that happens, it's a climb, and so now with a climb, and then finding throwing lanes for the football. It's not always throwing over people. It's finding lanes to throw the football. This hits Mark Andrews between the 8 and the 9 over the middle. That's excellent. And this is what I mean. Here's the free runner. Off of play action, you're going to get an add-on. It's not picked up properly, and so now you got somebody running free. Okay, so do you escape and just take off and run? No. You move in the pocket, and ball comes out quickly, nearly on time, even though you're moving from inside the pocket. And so I think when you see these things show up, you go, wait a second. If that's good enough to stay on schedule one time in a drive, if it's good enough to extend a drive one more time, with the way that football team plays, sometimes that's just enough. And so, yeah, I think there's been clear growth in the passing game for Lamar without them changing their offensive identity.
And it all adds up to what? They're 5-1. They remain completely decimated by injury. Again, the news today that they lose the offensive tackle. Can they keep this going through an entire season without all of these important pieces?
I don't think so. And maybe the Ravens fans will jump off of Jeremy and jump on me. But I do think that eventually the injuries will catch up to him. And Lamar's been outstanding. But you're in the NFL. Like, the talent matters. The other teams have lots of talent. And I feel bad for Jeremy because I'm wrong all the time, too. But whoever your sources are, cut them off. Whoever told you that foolishness this offseason, man, never talk to them again.
Absolutely right. I mean,
In the context of the playoffs, though, that was the main thing.
Oh, can you here get we go. Now you're setting yourself up. I can't wait till the playoffs come.
So basically, you're going to have to hear this now for the next 12 weeks.
Okay, they never said it. It was never said.
Speaking of the playoffs, it certainly feels like the Dallas Cowboys are headed there. The fans, meanwhile, are talking Super Bowl, and this team might actually be worthy of the hype. But we'll tell you why not playing this week could actually be the best thing.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Saturday night, we got a good one presented by Capital One. It's a Big Ten battle. Number 5, Ohio State, taking on Indiana at 7:30 Eastern on ABC and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. All right, how about them Cowboys? They're 5-1, but Mike McCarthy has remained the object of some scrutiny because of some decisions that we've seen over the course of the year. We go back to week 2 against the Chargers when he waited until the final seconds of the game to call a timeout rather than trying for better field position. There was all that talk about whether or not he could see the clock. That was a mess. Week 3, following week against the Eagles, we saw him hold on to 2 timeouts instead of trying for a final scoring drive at the end of the first half. That was questionable to say the least. They won big, so it didn't wind up mattering. This past Sunday, a lot of decisions that got a lot of scrutiny, failing on that 4th-and-1 there, and then late in the game, choosing not to go for it on a 4th-and-2, and Greg Zuerlein missing a field goal. So a lot of talk. Here's Jerry Jones with his thoughts.
I'm right in there with Mike on his game management. I think he does it extremely well. But more importantly, I want all of our fans to know how conscientious about it, how hard he works on it, the detail of situational rehearsal and practice that he does.
So how do we feel about the rehearsal at practice at this point? I don't know. I've covered the sport my entire adult life. I've never heard anyone say exactly that. I'm sure it happens.
I just don't know what work he's doing on this. And I think that he deserves credit. They're a good team. He's the head coach. I'm not exactly sure what he deserves credit for specifically, but he deserves credit for that. Mike McCarthy, that is. However, you can't keep making these mistakes. And I understand that they haven't cost them a win, but in tight games, those are the things that cost you wins. Like, those are the difference. That's why we rave about Bill Belichick, because in those situations, he rarely makes the wrong decision. That's the difference between having an okay coach and having a championship quality coach. And Mike McCarthy has won a championship before, so maybe I should defer to him. But we all know what he has done was not right in either of those 3 situations you brought up. We could expand it to even more. There's some other more questionable decisions, but those are absolutely wrong. No one can argue that those decisions were the right ones.
So, fair enough. And before I get Tim in, because Jeremy, you weren't here earlier, like Rex Ryan has said on this show, Nick, I think you may have said it as well, although I wasn't sure if you were half kidding when you said it. But Kellen Moore, their offensive coordinator, who Rex calls Boy Wonder, is going to be one of the hottest coaching candidates during this upcoming offseason. And Rex has said, you just watch. They're going to find a way to keep him, even if that means making a change at head coach. What, if anything, can you share about that?
Well, Kellen Moore should be a top 3 candidate for a head coaching job in this cycle. He is garnering considerable buzz right now. I keep hearing the Cowboys aren't very happy with Mike McCarthy. It would take sort of a big momentum shift to have to do something like that. It would probably take a lot of losses as well. And so there's really no buzz in league circles about that, but Jerry Jones would be the kind of aggressive owner to do that. And I did ask some coaches, texted and called with some guys last night and this morning just about Mike McCarthy, and they're like, you know, maybe he looked a little overwhelmed at times, but they're willing to give him a pass. They say generally he's a pretty aggressive coach, tries to be aggressive in those moments. Even if they backfire, he's willing to own that. They expect him to get to work on the bye, try to figure all that out. And they say, look, the guy's 5-1. What are you going to complain about?
Fair enough. He's working very hard on the rehearsal. There's a lot of rehearsal going on of those situations. Tim Hasselbeck, take it.
Well, part of what Dominic's saying, like, what credit do we give him? They're a good football team. They've got 1 loss. And the reality is around the football league, these aren't decisions that are solely made in game by a head coach. Like, we're going to give Bill Belichick credit for what Ernie Adams, you know, decides during a football game. And that is the case. Just newsflash for everybody around the football league. There are guys that are handling game management everywhere around the league that are not the head coach that have the headset on. And I would just say this, in terms of some of these situations we're being critical about, whether it's the Philadelphia game where they're not aggressive at the end of the first half. Like, they're not the first team to do that. They still won by 20 points. Or against, New England. They go for it on fourth and one, and they don't get it. So why in the world, when you can take the lead with around 2 minutes left in the football game, and you're in Greg Zuerlein's range, is it not okay to kick the field goal? Like, nobody's going to be perfect. Hindsight, certainly 20-20. But they're winning football games. You can find these situations throughout the league. And I said this early in the last hour. Mike Vrabel has been awesome at game management, or his staff has, for that matter. And they weren't taking timeouts at the end of the Monday night game without knowing if Buffalo was going to kick a field goal to tie the game. Like, you could be critical of that as well. They still end up winning the football game. So it's around the league. I think we're being too hard on McCarthy.
Very quickly, is it possible that one of the reasons that this is such a topic of conversation is because it is the Cowboys, because they're good, because their game is always a huge spotlight every week, so we're paying more attention to every little decision they make than other teams?
It's not possible. That's a fact. I think everyone's right about that, but that doesn't change the fact that the decisions, at least in my view, they don't hold up to any real analysis. And I understand they're winning. That's fine. And I think that Mike McCarthy deserves credit to the point I was making earlier. Yes, he deserves credit. I just don't know for what. Like, good for you, but like, I can't point to a thing and say, I guess he's managing the culture well. It's hard for me to point to that thing.
Okay, I have to leave it there for a moment. It's an intriguing concept. We'll talk about it as we go. But we have this huge story in basketball, and I've got to get Doris and Legs in on this. The drama in Philadelphia certainly took over the sports day yesterday as the Sixers suspend Ben Simmons for the team season opener tonight for conduct detrimental. According to Woj, Simmons was thrown out of practice by Doc Rivers after he declined several times to sub in for a drill. Here's more from the coach.
My job as a coach is to keep trying to get guys to buy in, to be in, and unfortunately this is tougher. One thing I know about players, our players will welcome anyone back in that wants to be in. I also know that players will not welcome anyone that doesn't want to be in. And so when that time comes, I guarantee you it won't be a hard thing to do.
At this point, I don't care about that man, honestly. He does whatever he wants. That's not my job. I'm not here to babysit. I'd be willing to babysit if, someone wants to listen, but that's not my job.
So Embiid not even willing to say his name, and you could see Ben Simmons walking out. He was practicing with a phone in his pocket. I mean, the behavior is ridiculous. Before I ask Doris, you're shaking your head. Like, you're a player in this league. Like, what do we, before we get into what happens now, like, what do we say about the way he's acting?
Well, you heard Doc spin it a little bit there. You heard Tobias Harris say something about, hey, man, players understand it's all business. That's a delusional spin. Here's why. I played on teams where guys held out for financial reasons because they thought they were being underpaid. And players do get that, right? You want to make sure you're getting what you're worth. That's not what this is. This is a guy who's already got his money. This is a guy who says, I don't want to play for the organization. I don't want to play for Doc Rivers. I don't want to play with Joel Embiid. Those are the two most important people in your organization. To me, this is so far beyond repair. And you can't force a guy back just for the money and think that's going to turn out well. He tried to communicate with them. He wasn't joking around. He doesn't want to be there. Now you have an ugly mess. And they're going to try to flush him back onto the court by freezing him out and suspending him, fining him, whatever it is. And you're going to get a guy that's not bought in, who has lost the respect of the guys in that locker room. It is an unsustainable situation. There is no great solution now for the 76ers.
To be clear, he has 4 years left on his contract, for those who are not aware. There's something galling about the entire thing. That said, Doris, can he ever play for the Philadelphia 76ers again?
I don't think he can, and let's not deceive ourselves. He didn't come back with the intention of being a teammate and contributing to winning. He came back to collect a paycheck. But now you've got no good options, because I'm going to tell you this, Greeny. The Philadelphia 76ers, their resolve is real, and they want a difference maker. This is a guy 6'11", 250 pounds, that can guard five positions at an elite level. And downhill in transition, there's still value here. But I think it's irreparable. I've only lived there 5 years. He's lived there far longer than I have. I just don't think he can play again in that organization. And I do think his battle is more mental than it is physical.
That I think we all agree. But that's a separate conversation. When you say they want a difference maker, mm-hmm. Well, let's say that's not so easy to get. Every team in the league knows they have to trade him, so they're going to continue giving low off. So where does this go from here, Doris?
It's going to stay ugly for a long time because, as I said, they're not moving him. And I think they're going to be patient to see what happens in Portland and other spots, and can they find somebody that is a difference maker? And Ben is now being overtly looking to sabotage you. So this is an ugly situation that's going to linger and get uglier.
And what we are going to be watching, if they do force him back to the court while they're trying to figure out where this goes, is a guy that's not bought in mentally, and it's not going to be genuine. And everybody in that locker room is going to know it. And the one guy we're not talking about enough in this, because Doc Rivers can be the face of it because he's got to talk to the media every day. As a coach, there is nothing more you detest than having a guy around that doesn't want to be there and is not pulling in the same direction, particularly at the start of a season when there's renewed energy, there's optimism, you think you've got a championship caliber team, and this guy is now derailing it. So Doc's going to say the right things organizationally at some point. The longer this goes on, Doc Rivers is going to go to Daryl Morey and say, we've got to do something here. This is sabotaging our entire year. We've got to make a move. And at that point, unfortunately, Sixers are going to get back less than they would have if they traded him in the summer.
To be clear, Doris, as a final word, that is in his best, meaning Simmons, to get what he wants, it behooves him to continue making it as impossible as he can. And so that is why the expectation is it gets worse, not better.
Recent history, James Harden forced his way out of Houston. It became untenable. They moved quicker than Daryl Morey seems to be moving. But I'm telling you, the resolve is real. I think this goes on for a bit.
Okay, well, we'll see. I mean, Portland, could they possibly get Damian Lillard out of this? That would obviously be a miraculous conclusion. I'm not sure it's headed in that direction. Tons of hoops tonight as we've got our first game, and I've got my first game, NBA Countdown, tonight. And I'll be with Stephen A. and Michael Wilbon, and Jalen Rose will be live on the floor at the Garden ahead of the Celtics and Knicks with the season opener. We're live tonight, 7 Eastern, right here on ESPN. Meantime, Aaron Rodgers proving again he owns the Bears. But after a tumultuous offseason, does his heart still belong to the Packers? We'll let him explain it next.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Back on Get Up. Such a busy week in football. Jeremy Fallow, let's run the hurry up.
Let's do it. Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham both have a chance to play Thursday night against the Broncos. Out. Beckham suffered a shoulder injury last week. He didn't practice at all Monday or Tuesday. That's a bit of a concern. But the good news is he did come back into that Cardinals game in the third quarter and didn't suffer any major setbacks. So they'll let him rest up, see how he feels. Now, Landry, I'm told, is more of a true game time decision. He's been on IR. He's feeling good. He just wants to make sure he can cut on that knee. Now, Teddy Bridgewater is expected to be available to the Broncos as of now. He suffered a foot injury last week against the Raiders, kind of got tangled up on some linemen, didn't do much practice work, but the Broncos aren't concerned with that. He knows the offense well, and so they'll see how he feels today. But they are pretty much locked in with Bridgewater, and the Broncos only have 11 guys on their injury report. The Browns have 19 guys on their injury report. So Denver in a little bit better shape for this Thursday night game. Let's go to Cliff Kingsbury. I'm told the Arizona Cardinals are optimistic as of now that Kingsbury, who's on the COVID-19 protocol list, can be active for Sunday's game. Now, all he needs is two consecutive negative COVID tests, and he's symptom-free. If he does that, he's good to go. But I was hearing some stories this week about Kyler Murray, how impressed the team was last week in Murray and the offense without Kingsbury, because he was checking into big run plays when it was a passing play. He's taking real ownership of this offense right now, and they like it.
They are the last unbeaten team in the NFL, so far so good for them, and we'll see if their coach is able to come back. Speaking of teams playing well, let's talk about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. He turned into unfiltered Aaron on Sunday in Chicago. You've seen it by now, yelling, "I own you," to Bears fans after scoring that touchdown that sealed the Green Bay win. Then yesterday with Pat McAfee, he was talking about what it felt like to walk off Soldier Field.
I was wondering what it would feel like to walk off the field, and in that moment, if it would feel like it was going to be my last time or not. And so I was, I was generally looking forward to what that felt like. And the way I felt walking off the field was why I answered the question the way I answered it. It didn't feel like the last time, for whatever reason. I'm not sure why necessarily, but energetically, it didn't feel like it was the last time walking off that field.
And there's so much here, but like, what does that mean exactly, Dominic? Like, what does walking off the field for the last time feel like?
I don't know. When I first read the quote, I thought that Packers fans maybe would draw some like confidence that he's coming back from it. But then when you actually listen to like the lead up to it, he was saying that he was anticipating it feeling weird or feeling like the last time, but it didn't feel like that. So what it says to me is, yes, this is the last time, but I'm surprised it didn't feel funny. Like, I thought it was going to feel funny, but yes, this is the last time. I won't be back here unless I see them in the playoffs when I'm somewhere else, or it just so happens I end up in this division playing for the Vikings or somebody. But it seems to me that the way that he's talking about this, the way that he's been leading up to it all season, that he is preparing us all. Either he just wants attention, or he's preparing us all for the fact that he is not going to be Green Bay Packer next season.
He's being startlingly honest. And I think of everybody, Tim Hasselbeck had actually the best explanation of exactly what is going on here. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I said the worst thing for the Green Bay Packers has been Pat McAfee and the Pat McAfee show, because what it's provided is Aaron Rodgers, basically a situation for just like the stream of consciousness to talk openly about anything that he is thinking. So, back when in the offseason when Schefter was talking about, hey, if you could give him a truth serum to see how he really feels about Green Bay, it's like, no, just give him a scotch and Pat and he'll sit down and tell you. And basically what's happened is, whether it's been how he feels about Mike Tomlin, how he feels about maybe playing for the final time at Soldier Field, like, Pat is getting it out of him. And I think for Green Bay, every time it's like, oh my gosh, here's something else that ends up being, something we're going to talk about all week, or we're going to get asked about going forward.
It really is remarkable. And at a time when superstar athletes tend to be more guarded than ever, who's less guarded than Aaron Rodgers? He'll just tell you whatever he's thinking at any time and expand on it into extraordinary detail. All of that said, Jeremy, what, if anything, should we be reading into any of this?
Well, I love it that he's totally honest. I don't think the Packers love it. In fact, I know the Packers are just happy to get past the offseason mess of the last 3 months, because right now it is about football. Even though he makes some of these comments, they feel like once he's on the field, once they got to training camp, really, they were in a good spot with him, and the turmoil was just sort of past him, at least on pause, for about 4 to 5 months. I talked to a player over there who said there was a renewed spirit. As soon as he showed up for camp, we knew our offense would be in good shape.
Do you have a sense one way or the other of whether he's still going? In his mind, just listening to all the things he says, we still think he's leaving?
Yeah. I mean, the tone that he had in there, the Mike Tomlin stuff, all the offseason stuff, like, it feels like he wants out. But I think the most important thing that we can take from this, from our intrepid reporter or intrepid interviewer, Pat McAfee, is that you, Mike, you got to start doing interviews in tank tops. I think that's what it is. If you do an interview in tank tops, then people they feel a little more relaxed. They might give you a little bit more.
Yeah, it's hard to do this at 8 o'clock in the morning. Not too many of my guests are drinking scotch. I mean, it's just not that easy to get that done.
Speak for yourself, Mike.
One way or another. Look, if there's one thing we can all agree upon, it is that McAfee has become a menace, and he must be stopped at all costs. All right, where are we here? Let's get up and go to the NLCS. The Dodgers took game 3 behind Cody Bellinger's 3-run bomb in the 8th inning. That tied things up, and you're going to see it right about here. Bam! Then Mookie Betts would knock in the go-ahead run, and L.A. won the game 6-5. It was a game they desperately needed. There's Mookie. Dodgers still trail the Braves in the series 2-1, but that was a big win. Meanwhile, in Boston, Jose Altuve with a home run in the eighth. That one here ties things up at 2 against the Red Sox. And then in the top of the ninth, the Astros poured it on. They scored 7 runs. They won the game 9-2, so that series is even at 2 games apiece. And then finally, in his 1,200th career game, Capital star Alex Ovechkin scored an empty net goal. Washington's 6-3 win over the Avs. For Ovechkin, it's his 4th goal in 3 games, 734th of his career. He's now 7 back of Brett Hull for 4th on the all-time list. And the U.S. women's national team will play the first of 2 friendlies against South Korea tomorrow. And notably, these will be the last 2 international matches for the legendary Carly Lloyd, who will retire after the NWSL season. Our coverage starts 8 Eastern on ESPN2 and the ESPN app, so you can watch from anywhere, one app, one tap. First Take, top of the hour, asking, should the Cowboys be thinking Super Bowl, and are the Browns a contender without Baker? Stephen A., Molly, Marcus Spears, top of the hour here on ESPN.